First of all, welcoming everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can now hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are switched off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recordings is not permitted. I'd remind members of their obligations under the Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the meeting today. This includes any relevant interests where the public could reasonably perceive their influence of judgment. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business at least. If you haven't declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item, should not take part in the discussion. You'll then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. Members are reminded they are personally responsible for any comments that they make at this meeting. Obviously, we are currently in hybrid, so please ensure if you wish to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate you wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via the chat facility so that we are aware this is not an active decision and not indicate continuity problems. Folks, it is a wet and dreary October night, and I'm sure our DFA colleagues who are attending have been extremely busy today with a number of challenges right across the district, but it's great to have Mark McPeak, the Divisional Roads Manager, Steve Duffy, the Section Engineer, and Colin Woods, the Deputy Secretary, with us today. Just before I go to that, we do have apologies from Councillor Hart, Brennan, Devlin, Finn, Kilbreath, Lee Surgner, Mathers, and Murphy. And Marie Ward, Chief Executive. Is there any other apologies that needs to be recorded?
Chair, Councillor Taylor as well.
Councillor Taylor. Any additionals? Nope. Okay. All right. And item two, is there any declarations of interest that anyone needs to declare? No. All right. Perfect. Item three then is the DFA Roads Annual Report, and obviously parties have had an opportunity to meet with DFA representatives last week in advance of this to raise any issues, but obviously if anyone has comments on the report that's going to be presented or any additional questions, I'll take these in turn. So I'm going to hand over to Mark and team, so you are very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity to present the DFI Roads Annual Report. My name is Mark McPeak. I'm the Divisional Roads Manager for Southern Division. Also with me is Colin Woods, the Department Roads Deputy Secretary, and Stephen Duffy, who is the Section Engineer in Down. I hope you have received a copy of the annual report, which shows the work we completed last year and our programme for this year. In June 2023, the Secretary of State provided all Northern Ireland departments with their budgets for 23-24. Regrettably, we are facing an extremely challenging year with a reduction of 14% in resource budget. Despite every effort to reduce spending, there still remains a significant funding gap. This is impacting on our ability to cover costs associated with day-to-day road maintenance, work like fixing potholes, traffic lights, road markings, gully cleaning, and so on. However, we are still continuing with our limited service policy, which means we are only repairing the highest priority defects, that being the deepest potholes on roads that carry the most traffic. To be clear, we don't do this because we want to or because we think it's good engineering practice. We do it solely because we do not have the money to do any more. For a number of years, funding for road maintenance has been far below the level required to maintain the structural integrity of the road network. Since 2014, it is estimated that the investment gap in essential maintenance is approximately $1 billion. As a result of this underfunding, regrettably, roads are gradually deteriorating. This year's opening capital budget for structural maintenance is £85 million, which is welcomed but still falls well short of the £143 million, which in today's prices is close to £200 million, needed to maintain the road network in a reasonable condition. Following legal challenges for the award of resurfacing contracts in 2021, we successfully procured two term contracts in June 22 that are split across the New Mourne area and the Down area. This has allowed much needed resurfacing work to be undertaken across the council area since last year. We are also mindful that rising construction prices means we get less resurfacing for the same money than in previous years, and will of course continue to take every opportunity to bid for capital funding during the year to maximise the use of these new contracts. We also have some capital budget for local transport safety measures. This allows us to deliver a programme of local improvements, including collision remedial measures, traffic calming, pedestrian crossings. However, our capacity to deliver this programme is less than what we would like, so we do need to prioritise those schemes that are in most need. The department has recently published a list of priority major projects and is based on a challenging budget position, constrained resources and commitments to the Climate Change Act. Development work on the A24 Ballnange bypass is substantially concluded, including the draft business case. However, this cannot be submitted until more certainty on funding is achieved. Development work on the Newry Southern Relief Road will continue to progress towards the next key decision regarding publication of draft orders. The department hopes to publish a transport strategy later this year that will inform the planning and delivery of transport infrastructure across Northern Ireland up to 2035. This strategy aims to align transport infrastructure with the requirements of climate change and legal obligations to deliver net zero by 2050. It will describe how active travel and improved public transport can enhance the function of the transport network. The decarbonisation of transport is likely to be the single largest strategic driver of our work over the next decade, which the strategy will aim to support. The requirement of the Climate Change Act has facilitated the provision of capital funding to invest into active travel schemes to encourage walking, wheeling and cycling. The department has commissioned a Northern Ireland-wide active travel delivery network plan, which is due for consultation in 2024, which when complete will provide a basis for the prioritisation of active travel schemes. We are geared up for gridding, which starts now in October and extends to April. In the council area, we have a fleet of 12 gridders to salt 833 kilometres of main roads. Across Southern Division, it takes nearly 4 hours to complete one gridding action, and we have a total of 135 personnel involved throughout the winter season. You will be aware that the weather has been particularly poor across the council area over the past week. This has resulted in road drainage running beyond its capacity. This has also resulted in a number of localised road flooding incidents, which we have managed to do the best of our ability to manage. With more poor weather forecast this week, we will continue to maximise our resources to deal with any incidents that may arise to protect public safety. Finally, we are keen to engage with elected representatives. However, we are facing significant staffing pressures. We do need to focus our attention on the delivery of key services and public safety issues in the first instance. I have included contact details on the back of the report for each of our teams. I would add that to maximise our effectiveness, I would encourage councillors and the public to report road defects using our online services rather than emailing us directly, as it will log defects directly into our system. Thank you, and that concludes the presentation of my report. I'm happy to attempt to answer your questions.
All right. Thanks very much, Mark. Thanks, Sir Jackson. I don't know where your comment went to. I did look at the chat given that you had put it in, now it's disappeared. But I take it you still have some question comments, so I'll bring you in.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate the presentation there. My comment was probably just focused on the kind of recent weather sort of warning and the sort of things that obviously progressed over the last sort of 12 hours and stuff, you know. I was just kind of wanting to follow on. Our group had an emergency meeting with the council this afternoon just on the sort of what the situation was regarding sandbags for those people in need, large businesses or private homes, with obviously the flooding situation at the moment. So it was basically just to ask council, was there any update from DFA on the provision of sandbags available to the public or to even to us as councillors to try and help those that are in need?
Andrew, are you best placed to answer that, or anyone from DFA?
So I don't know the specific latest position on sandbags, but I do know that our colleagues in Rivers are activating their emergency response plans, as you would expect. There's a couple of meetings scheduled for this evening after this, where I think Mark and I may be joining in with those. If there's any immediate need for help, there's the flooding incident line, obviously, and dialing 999 would be the advice in an extreme situation where there's a risk to life.
Enough for that.
I thought council was maybe to contact the DFI again locally. I know there's other areas where the sandbag provision has been allowed for, whether it be from a container for members of the public to try and avail of. So I was just trying to find out, have there been any conversations since our meeting this afternoon with the DFI to sort of clarify
what I'm aware of is there has been a series of multi-agency meetings today, and we have escalated internally the need to have resources and contractors and staff on RODAs, et cetera, and our O&M staff are being redeployed from other areas down to this council area in particular, because that's the focus of attention over the next 2 or 3 days. Okay. Sandbags, I did see something pop up this afternoon that there is a number of thousands of sandbags being made available. Stephen Duffy might be able to just inform us of maybe the detail of that, because Stephen's involved in he's connected to our Silver Command. Stephen, do you have any detail about sandbags?
Well, in Southern Division, we've just under 10,000 sandbags ready to distribute at locations where flooding is likely to occur. I would say that the Rivers Agency has containers at known locations like Ansborough, like in Leitrim Village, and these at times of flooding the local community use these sandbags, and we work with the Rivers Agency and have them maintain their stock. I would just say as well that a lot of people contact us saying I'm concerned there's going to be flooding. Unfortunately, in situations like that, we get so many of these, and quite often, you know, in the past, sandbags have been taken to locations that never flooded. So, you know, it is a vital resource that we try to maintain. So we don't just hand out, you know, sandbags because people are concerned. You know, there needs to be a realistic possibility of flooding.
I would add, just to divert away from sandbags, I would add that we have been very proactive over the last couple of days during what I would call a relatively dry period compared to what's probably going to come on us the next few days, to take the opportunity to engage with council and arrange sweeping, particularly because it's the leaves and the detritus that sits on the road that blocks the gullies. So there's been a lot of work with council, so I thank council for that. So we've engaged with them to sweep the hot spots, so to speak, in the council area to try and prevent preventative action, and to prevent, and also in those hot spots throughout the council area, we have attempted to try and clean and clear gullies in those hot spots. We're doing our best. We're maximising our resources, and we'll continue to monitor and escalate and report to Silver Command.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Councillor Jackson.
Thank you.
Councillor Andrews. You there, Tara?
On the screen.
Yeah, we're just getting Terry unmuted. Just
I'll tell you what. Sorry, man. Hold on. I don't know what's going on there.
Can't hear Tara.
Speakers are off.
Yeah, that's you now.
Well, I'm done. I'm sorry with that. It takes something to mute me, I can tell you. But, first of all, the link still not working.
Terry, I'll bring in Councillor McAteer and come back to you just while we fix that out. Councillor McAteer.
Okay, thank you, Gareth. Yeah, and thanks, Mark, for your presentation. And I see, obviously, somebody there from the Secretary's office, Colin Wood. So I think that's the first time we've had somebody from the Department Secretary along, or Deputy Secretary. So I sympathise with your situation in terms of budgeting and the constraints that you're facing at the moment. Which is going to probably have effect for many long years. So, my sympathy for that. Actually, a few questions and comments, but I just looking around my general area and some of the work that has been done over the last while, especially with those short stretches of asphalt and bitmac, and they have worked quite really well, effectively well. And address some of the major potholes in the area. So, keep that type of work up in the rural areas. And to that end, I just noticed that you have 8 million, is it, for out of the roads recovery fund. So, I just wonder what our share of that will be, looking forward. So I wasn't able to meet whoever those attended the Cradle Eve meeting, at short notice last week. Something happened family wise and I couldn't do it. So, I forwarded some questions there, but some of the comments I have tonight, maybe I would have made them there. So I just noted some of the work that I've been doing with, Val Russell and some of the visits that he made, but none of those have been documented. For example, under the collision remedial works, one that we had agreed to do work on was Milltown Crossroads at the upper Bramore Road Warren Point, that particular junction. So I don't see that on the 23-24 plans, even though he indicated that that would be done. And there's been quite a lot of small works that haven't been done. For example, agreed signage been placed. Like there's signage, for example, the Green and Road, Dury, where Val asked for a 30-mile-an-hour sign to be moved about 100 yards to the last street lighting, where there's been quite a lot of housing built. And that's, we're on the third year of that, waiting on that to be done. Simply just moving a sign 100 metres with no legislation rent required. And you get very disappointed when you have a situation like that. So the other thing I noticed, I think you did answer there, was the absence of any active travel plans. So, but you say that there is a report coming in at some stage next year. So maybe just enlighten me even more about that, because a few in my area that was applied for. So basically, I think that's more or less it for me. The only other thing is, Mark, you did talk there about encouraging people to go online. But I find you don't get any feedback whatsoever, and you do document yourself as a counsellor on it. But I've yet in my, 13 years or whatever, as a counsellor, ever had any reply to anything on that. I get a really good response from your staff and Yuri, Paddy Fagan, John Rooney and Neil Totten in the light section, and a good working relationship with them. But nobody ever comes back to you online now, just for your own information. I think it would be helpful if we did, you know, and even if that's an IT issue, you know, maybe correct it, that councillors, whoever reports it, could have a quick flick of a switch to say that the work was actually done, to save having to go back and for us to check it again, you know. So, generally speaking, thanks for what you do, and thanks for your staff to do what you try to attempt to do under all the circumstances that you face. So that's me. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'll attempt. I've jotted down some of your questions, so I'll attempt to answer them quickly. So yes, the Rouge Recovery Fund, I think it's about 8 million across the four divisions, and I think that our division gets about 3 or 4 million of that. We split that amongst the council areas. I don't know exactly what it is for Newry Moore and Down, but it'll probably be about 1.1, 1.2 million as a guess. I appreciate that you've been talking to Val about collision remedial work. It's possible that the reason that if Val's committed to do it, it'll be on his list to do. And the reason why it's probably isn't in the report is because we haven't been able to program it into a new contract at the moment. Our new contracts for small scale and minor works, small scales is about to start in November, so we'll have another small scale contract for about over a year. So we'll have a long list of things to do. So as soon as they hit the ground, we'll be able to get things literally in place. But we need to prioritise that in order of, you know, having biggest impact first. And then we also have a minor works contract that's being procured at the moment, and that'll hopefully be up and running in January, February time. And again, we have limited resources, so we'll be programming as much as we can within this financial year. And anything we don't get done this financial year, we'll be bringing into next financial year subject to funding. Active travel, I'll attempt to answer active travel. Colin might want to say something about active travel as well. There's been a lot of work done on active travel, not purely, but as a result of the Climate Change Act, and we have a significant amount of money to be spent every financial year on that to encourage walking, wheeling and cycling. So that active travel delivery plan is a strategic document being pulled together by our consultants to look at how to strategise the delivery of active travel across all of Northern Ireland and select what potential routes and how to link towns and cities together. In this council area, we will have a number of things that we think are a good idea to connect those places. And you've maybe seen already on the ground that we're taking forward a number of what I would call them obvious wins. So we're working in advance of the active travel strategy document to try and get things in place. And hopefully those schemes will link into the new proposals in the new document. So that and this new draft document will be out to consultation in early 2024. Colin, I'm not sure if you wanted to add to that.
Not a great deal. You've covered it well there. What I would say is that we're very conscious that when you compare the scale and the number of active travel schemes we've delivered each year over the last 5 or 6 years, we recognise that the passage of the Climate Change Act and the target to spend 10% of the transport budget on active travel means that we have to grow that capacity to deliver schemes that provide value for money in their own right really quite significantly. And so our hope is that by consulting on a very ambitious plan, we have multiple schemes that are ready to go as and when funding becomes available for them.
Okay.
Lastly, Gareth, sorry, to pick up on the online reporting. Thank you for your comment. You're not the only one who says it. but what I would say is that our online reporting system, our report default system, is very, very effective from our side. So whenever public elected representatives put in defects for us to collect, those defects go straight into our operational system, and they are taken forward urgently, triaged. We siphon out what we think are, first of all, emergencies, second of all, high priority, and then which ones would meet our limited service policy. And we would very actively take those forward I do apologise for what is probably a lack of response. There is a bit of an internal delay in terms of processing those defects and getting the information back to get back into the system. To update the system, it takes people. And unfortunately, we don't have many. We tend to focus our PMT or engineers based on trying to take forward those priorities and get work delivered on the ground. So I do apologise for not updating it, the system more quickly. If we had more people, we'd be able to do it much more effectively. But I would still encourage you to report. They're not missed. They're collected. Our priority is fixing those defects on the ground the best we can within the resources and budget we've got.
I suppose what I was just mentioning on that, Mark, there is a search function. So obviously you get your W and then your long number, which you can serve as an update on that. But we could get an email notifying that you've raised it. Maybe internally someone could look at an IT that when an update is in, you get another email saying it's now been updated, and that would certainly.
I do appreciate that, and I chair one of the maintenance committees throughout the four divisions, and we've talked about this at length, at great length, and there's no plan at the moment to attempt to change that. So I apologise for that.
No, it's all right. We just need to remember.
Just a wee quick one. Just I wonder, did they actually prioritise any of the counsellors' report above anybody else coming in or not?
No, the priority status is based on a limited service, and the type of defect it is, the type of road it's on. If it's on a high traffic, high speed road, we would take that defect, and depending on its depth and severity, we would take those forward as a priority.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Declan. Councillor Andrews, are you with us now?
I'll try. Can you? I don't know what's going on in here.
You want to come down and pick up mine? Because there doesn't seem to be feedback from mine.
Yeah,
if you come down here, it's, the problem is there's too many laptops in the chamber. Sorry. So we're not operating through the actual room. It's not working. So you should be able to, it should pick you up there anyway.
No problem. Look, say look at all the bother I'm causing in here, but first and foremost, I'd like to thank the Road Service for their reports, and in particular, I'd like to thank Hugh Morgan and his team, and also Traffic Management in North Calgary and Street Lighting for all their help and support over the past year. And that's a credit to the organisation, and I do hope that you pass that back to them. Whatever you do is very much appreciated. And there's no point being on. But I've already submitted a list, but I know several weeks ago we did have a motion in this council on the Ballinhedge bypass, and as you know yourself, that's been a starting agenda item for many years, and I did call upon funding and resources, you know, to get, I know the project's shovel ready, and I know there's other projects done, and I know the likes of the A5 and other roads that, you know, a lot of lobbying and campaigning has been done, but you know, in the meantime, with the Ballinhedge bypass being trouble ready and ready to go, can consideration be given to get that much needed project going? Because Ballinhedge at the minute, it's strangled, you know, with the excess traffic and going through it to and through Belfast and down the Mourns. It's a key destination, so I do hope that that request would be considered, and also Doran's Rock. As I said to you, I've set in a list of items, and there's no point in raking over old ground again. But in relation to the budgetary constraints that are on DFI Road Service, I'm just wondering, is there anything that can be done at the permanent secondary level to short circuit whatever barriers are in place to get the much needed funding that is held up somewhere to get, if any procedures within at that level could be found to act upon, you know, to get the get sources and all out, to get whatever roads need done. And I know you, as officers, your hands is tied with the budgets, etc. at this moment in time. But I do, you know, as I say again, and the constraints that these are in, I do appreciate very much what you do. In relation to the website, I'm just wondering, I find the NI Direct website offensive, if not. I'm not exactly, I'll put my hands up to this, I'm not exactly a computer savvy person, but I find the experience on NI Direct is really a bit, in my own words, harrowing. You know, whenever you're clicking on buttons and dots and everything, and it takes me a while to get on to the routine. But I'm just wondering, even could a page be set up on a DFI website that the likes of the public and the likes of elected representatives could use, and if it was simplified, you know, and maybe that could be an avenue that you could look at as well. But again, as I say, I've missed everything that needs mentioned, but again, thank you for your help and support. Thanks, sir, for letting me use your computer.
Thanks for those comments. I'll try and answer some of your comments around the major projects and the Ballinahinch bypass in particular, and then Mark can come in and answer some of your other questions. So when we talk about limited budgets, it might be helpful if I explain a little bit more about what exactly that means, just to illustrate some of the challenges that we're managing and that you've acknowledged. So from a capital budget, which is how we fund our major projects this year, we received an allocation of about 792 million, but that was about 146 million short of what we needed to deliver this year's work, right across both roads, rivers, Northern Ireland Water and TransLink. And obviously when you're dealing with that big a shortfall, it very much constrains your ability to find ways to progress different pieces of work. So the decision to prioritise our major road schemes was driven, largely by that budget shortfall and the lack of multi-year budgets that allow us to plan with more confidence into the future. So if you look at the list that was published, it's essentially a list of things that an executive has already agreed to prioritise. So it starts with the executive flagship schemes and then moves down through the Belfast Region City Deal schemes, which includes the Newry Southern Relief Road, and then the Mid-South West Deal schemes as the next deal that we expect to be signed. There isn't any more money for major projects after that. That's why the list stops where it is. But it's absolutely not the case that we don't see the value that other schemes, including the Ballinahinch bypass, would bring in terms of the quality of life, the community in Ballinahinch, the air quality, all sorts of good reasons in the business case for that scheme as to why it would be valuable to proceed with. Our issue, as Mark says, is we've largely completed the preparatory work. The only thing to do now is when you actually have a credible funding plan to take it through the final stages of the process. If we were to do more work and start that and hope that the money arrives and then find that the money doesn't arrive, you've essentially wasted time and public money in work that will have to be repeated when you come to actually deliver the scheme in subsequent years. So while I appreciate it's still a frustrating position to be in, hopefully that at least sort of clarifies the logic that we've tried to apply in terms of which schemes are on that list and which ones weren't at this point in time.
Thanks.
I can pick up on Doran's Rock and the website. You'll have noticed, Councillor Andrews, that in this year's report, Doran's Rock's not included. It was originally listed under SRI schemes because it's on a SRI road, but I've decided to take it off because it was largely paused. It was very low on the priority list, and forgive me, but if it remained on the SRI project list, it'd probably never get done. So what we've done internally in the department is across the four divisions is set up what used to be what's called large minor schemes. And those large minor schemes are schemes that are above, you know, $1.5 million to $5 million. And the Doran's Rock scheme sat in that category. So what we've done in all the four divisions is brought forward a whole series of schemes, large schemes that would create, you know, big improvements, smaller schemes, but big improvements. And in the division, what we've done, we've put the Doran's Rock scheme in that bucket of things that we could possibly do. Now at the moment, we are Doris Rock is paused largely, but it's in the mix with a lot of other schemes that we would like to take forward. And we have looked at all of those schemes and prioritised the ones in most need based on injury collisions, based on high priority safety need, and where we need to spend our money first. So we're taking forward a number of other schemes first in the division that have a big safety impact. And it'll take a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, to develop those first. But Doris Rock hasn't been lost. It's still in there. Second of all, then, about the website, I think you've made a really good point. It's a bit unwieldy, but it works. There has been, over the last few months, there's been a lot of discussion, and driven by Colin Woods, of the need to bring together, you know, a more effective and streamlined IT process. It's clear that we're wee bit behind in that. And we need to, as Colin's direction is great. He's basically said to get something on, you know, carved out to how we can improve the system. So there's a lot of work being done in the background by another division roles manager, actually, to bring together all that package of work. So that actually we can bring together everything and interlink them, have a much more effective IT process. It's been recognised, basically. But it's going to take a wee bit of work to put it together. Hopefully it'll drive internal efficiencies as well.
All right. Thanks, Councillor Andrews. Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the representatives here. And I suppose just to extend the thanks as well. I think you know, we had our wee clinic there with the reps earlier on in the week, it's always very useful to bring the sort of those wee micro issues, the sort of the bread and butter things to those, and it's always very useful. So thank you very much. Extend the thanks on to your colleagues that help facilitate those. But I suppose really one thing that, you know, again was raised there, and I've raised, you know, again, just to raise again, it's concerns around the proposed Dundrum active travelway and between the Dundrum and 12 Arches, and just where the location of it. Just to give a sort of a brief surmise, really, certainly anybody that's in contact with me are very, very supportive of that. You know, they want to see active travelways in Dundrum, and they want to be connected. They're certainly very supportive of connecting Dundrum to Murlough and onwards, hopefully, to Newcastle. And again, as you said yourself, Mr. McPeak, you know, it's about linking towns and villages, and we think that's very, very important, for sure. However, the concern is just really about bringing the active travel away, essentially what we would sort of describe as the landward side, as opposed to the seaward side, if that makes sense. And essentially, there's a real concern amongst residents of Dundrum that, given you will, you know, given that you, you know, the other side of the village, it's on the seaward side. Given that the most natural way for it to go beyond Murlough towards Newcastle is essentially the seaward side, that by bringing it across into the landward side, you're going to essentially force people that wish to use it to essentially cross the road two times, once at Keel Point and again back at the 12 Arches. And, you know, there's just, and for anybody that knows that stretch of road, it's unfortunately, it is demonstrably dangerous on account of accidents in the past. So there's also, again, a perception as well that this somehow has been arrived at, this decision to have it sort of the landward side, on account of allowing vehicles to park on the seaward side, or continue to park on the seaward side, which sort of is a bit counterintuitive given the preference to the vehicles, whenever it should be really preference to those wishing to use the active travelway. So I suppose really, just in conclusion, really, it's sort of the main ask I have of the DFI reps, and in fact and such like, is that just that, you know, DFI would encourage and consult you know, with DEA councillors, that's the Croob area, and the Village Association, and indeed other agencies. You know, there are other agencies there that, you know, need to be consulted, or maybe there could be work around and communicate further. Communicate again with the PSNI as to the concerns about the road, and enhance the safety crossings at the 12 arches, certainly regardless of what comes out of it. But ultimately, just to reconsider that reconsider the side they place the active travelway, not to reconsider the actual active travelway itself. Again, I can't stress enough, the villagers want to see the active travelway, people want to see the active travelway, but it's just the huge concerns regarding having it on essentially the landward side as opposed to the seaward side. And again, I think it has been raised certainly at a council level at various points, and I know Mr. Castles has communicated this on behalf of us as well to DFI on letters. So anyway, that's just a thank you very much, Chair, for listening to that and the representatives.
Yep, thanks for that. This has been brought to my attention recently. And I agree that firstly, the road is a national speed limit road, so it's very fast, very dangerous. There's been a number of injury collisions in the past. We have looked at the possibility of trying to do something to try and help crossings. So regardless of that, there has been a bit of discussion as to, you know, the cycle track proposed at the moment is on the land side. And you're right. I mean, moving it across from Dundrum over to the other side, there's a crossing needed for that. And then anyone who's cycling wanted to go to the beach, so to speak, would need to cross the road. But the view of the traffic team is that those cars who would normally park in the hard shoulder and on the beach side, that would potentially encourage more people to cross and have a higher risk of people crossing the road. I think the way forward here is to try and maybe meet with the residents groups and get a meeting in place to try and discuss what we think the best option is, and trying to work it out that way. I don't think there's any right or wrong here. It's about doing what's safest for everybody and the public.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Is that something that we can do through the DA coordinator of Secret, which from memory is pretty clear?
Yeah. So our active travel team can liaise with council and get something arranged to have a discussion about it.
All right.
Perfect. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Ms. McPeak.
Thanks. Okay, Councillor Clark.
All right, Chair, thanks very much. And thanks very much for the presentation. First of all, I'd like to pay tribute to your staff. They're always very helpful throughout the year, try their best, you know, to resolve the problems that we raise as elected reps. And given the day it is today and the weather that's coming in the future, really appreciate your efforts going forward. I suppose maybe to start off in regards to bad flooding, the Glasdrummond A2, Kilkeel to Newcastle Road was blocked today. And it's been blocked numerous times. It's a perennial problem that happens all the time. So I suppose my question is, you know, what investigations has been carried out to resolve the problem moving forward? And also on that road also, I'd like to add that in my opinion and the rest of the Mourne DEA councillors would think that the A2 is a main road. It's used by all the commuters going to Belfast. And it's some really bad pinch points on it. And it would be very useful if there was a sort of program of work looking at improving that year on year, you know, taking out the narrow bits, increasing opportunities even to overtake, because it is a very dangerous road. So I'll leave that at that. The other point, maybe you were talking the Dundrum to Newcastle active travel. I agree with the comments and Councillor McMurray raised. It also involves, obviously, Mourne DA councillors, because the Mourne DA goes right up to Key Point. So they would have to be involved as well. The crossing at the 12 hours is a very dangerous location. I think we're all agreed it's a very fast part of the road. I think it would be useful if we could, you know, look at providing a railing to corral pedestrians from the council-owned car park across the crossing point that has been provided. I think the public don't realise that there is a crossing point of some sort. And if there was a railing to direct people to the crossing point so they weren't crossing at various, you know, different locations, I think that would be useful. And maybe in the discussions that we've already heard outlined, if we do get an opportunity to DA meetings, we can maybe explore that on site moving forward. I'd just like to thank the DFI roads as well. Strathern Manor, Tollymoor Road, Newcastle, there was a massive tree came down and basically it isolated the elderly population. They couldn't get out all day today, but I think there was circumstances in regards to having to get a crane and that type of activity, but somebody just texted me there at 6 o'clock saying they're starting work now, clearing, at least getting access to allow people out. So I'd like to thank you for that. For getting that work done. Just a final point then, Chair, is just in regards to the Gritton MOU between Council and DFI Roads. Maybe a bit of clarity who triggers the agreement, because last year there was a bit of confusion who actually, you know, has the responsibility for triggering it. Obviously, it's dependent on the severity of the weather, which then allows Council staff to be able to carry out this work. But it'd be useful to get this, you know, resolved before, you know, we get the freezing weather after the wet weather. So just in regards to then, will there be grid provided or made available? And maybe you could speak on the amount of grid that, you know, will be available for the winter months coming in, you know, for replenishing grid bins and such like. But thanks very much for your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. There was a lot there. So I've wrote a few comments. I'm sorry, I actually dropped out. I lost connection for 10 seconds, so hopefully I've got everything. Thanks for your points about Dundrum after travel and you know, the railings, etc. If we can pick that up in the discussion, happy to have that discussion with the active travel team. I think you're right. I mean, a couple of years ago, I think there was an incident there. It is an area that I think we can maybe have a wee look at to see if we can do anything. But being very mindful of our policy documents, et cetera, and you know, compliance, without having to put anything in that would create more risk. So that's what our policy documents are designed around. But also very conscious of, you know, making sensible engineering judgments about what's right and what's wrong, if you know what I mean. So if there's something that we can do to make something better and safer, then that's our role to try and do that. Let me see what else. I'll pick up the gridding. I hope I haven't missed anything. The gridding MOU is a memorandum of understanding between the department and the council, which is put in place for prolonged winter spells and prolonged cold spells. Prolonged, in our view, would be very prolonged, like what happened in, like it was 2012, where there was an extended period of frost, not just frost, but ice. Where we need to put in place an agreement of mutual aid. So there is a mutual aid agreement between the department and the council agreed, and in it has specific locations in the council area where we will provide assistance for the council, and that assistance is to provide salt and then work with council officials to try and organise, you know, those specific areas for additional, not just gridding, but other specific areas that are identified in it. So our role, we would say, is as, you know, sitting down having a discussion about what's needed, but whenever it's triggered, for me it's about prolonged. The incident that happened last winter was a cold snap over a week or so. That wouldn't be my definition of prolonged. So I know there was a discussion about it then.
In terms of gridding and gridded piles and salt bins, as I said in my presentation, that our gridding winter season started. It starts in October and goes to April. And we will have now stocked up the grit piles and the salt bins. But in any cold snap, for a week or so, it doesn't take long for those to be depleted. Unfortunately, it does take us a while to get round them all and refill them. I heard a statistic that it takes eight crews, 8 weeks to go around the division. That's how long it takes. We've got so many of them. We've got 58,000 grit piles and something like 10,000 grit bins. So we have a lot to do. They're not just replenished overnight, but we do our best with the resources we've got available and with a very reduced resource budget, which pays for winter gridding. And I think it's right to say, Colin, I don't know if you want to pick up on this, but we're not funded at the start of the year for winter service. But we're still going ahead to take forward winter service, and we'll make a bid in year to try and fund it as we go through. I'm not sure, Colin, if you have any more information on that.
Yeah, so typically at the start of each year, the baseline budget that DFI gets doesn't include the £7 million that we need to deliver winter service each year. So typically we bid for that in monitoring rounds at the end of each quarter. Now, in the absence of an executive, there aren't monitoring rounds, unfortunately. So that's part of the reason why the department's currently projecting an overspend well in excess of £80 million, because we've recognised that, first of all, it would be a very bad thing for the road network and for the people who use it to not grid. But we also don't believe we have the lawful authority to take a decision to stop gridding under the powers that the civil service has through the Executive Functions Act. We don't think that covers a decision to not grid. It is interesting, though, that the gridding service that we provide is not one of the many, many things that the law obliges us to provide. So we're obliged to clear the roads of snow and obstructions like trees, but we have a discretionary power to grit. Now, we don't really treat it as discretion. We recognise that it's as close to a legal obligation as you can get without actually being one. But it's just an interesting example of how, when a budget on the resource side this year, where we're roughly £160 million short of what we needed, it's the sort of thing that puts pressure on services and pressure on the people delivering them, as Mark has described.
Okay, all right, thank you, Councillor Clark.
Just in regards to the Glasdrumman issues, the flooding issue in Glasdrumman.
Oh, yes.
On the A2 road, Kilkeel, and also looking at improvements to that road, because I don't see a lot of work being carried out.
Sorry, I forgot. There's a long list, sorry.
Sorry about that.
Stephen, is that your area, or is that...
No, it's not. It's managed out in Newry.
Oh, it's managed out in Newry. So Bruna's not here, she's not able to attend. But I'll pick that up with Bruna. Take it away and talk to her about it.
That's dead on. Thanks very much.
All right. Thanks, Lou O'Hare.
Hi, good evening. Can everyone hear me? Yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Just to start then, thank you for your report and all your efforts, particularly in what I know is a very busy and very difficult week. My comment and question is back to sandbags, and I know that Councillor Jackson had already asked about that this evening, but I just wanted to kind of double check a couple of things. I understand that floodline is what you were saying is the first recourse to request sandbags, and I understand the policy that while they're not provided in advance of an actual flood taking place, in terms of resources available. However, one of the experiences that I've had, and I know that others on council have had, is, you know, maybe trying to contact Floodline. I've had that conversation with them about getting sandbags in advance of a flood, and them not being available. But actually then when a flood is taking place, councillors have had the experience where we're told that it's not the priority in an emergency to provide the actual sandbags. So can I just add that I'm really, really grateful to DFI. I know many members of DFI have completely gone out of their way and worked really, really hard to get sandbags to people when they've been requested in flooding situations. But there seems to be, maybe something, a systems failure there in terms of a floodline that maybe could be looked at. Because prior to the flooding, we can't get the sandbags. And then it's possible that during the flooding, it's not the priority. I suppose my question is really, as going forward, we all know that resources are going to be even more stretched, and that maybe there was something in terms of advanced planning that we could be doing to help people prepare better before the floods, rather than it being left to the last minute. You know, today, like many of us, were probably trying to get sandbags for people who are very worried. They're maybe already flooded or on the verge. You know, you can count in inches how far the water has to rise yet this evening. And so they'd like to be able to plan ahead that little bit more. I just thought that maybe there was a better system going forward to help people to plan ahead, while I'm cognizant of the fact that resources are limited in terms of the actual sandbags. There's even people today who would regularly flood, you know, have had that experience before, but that was the response on floodline, that in this situation today, it's not the priority.
I will attempt to answer that. I think it's a good question. I think it's a number of really good points. And actually, there was a lot of discussion about this today in the multi-agency group and with all the division risk managers, and Stephen actually was involved in that as well. So let me talk about the advanced planning work and proactive work. There was a lot of discussion today of what we could do during this period of what I called previously a relatively dry period. In other words, it wasn't raining that much in terms of what's going to come on ahead of us this week. So there's been a lot of work done engaging with council to get sweeping it, clearing of debris in particular. We actually think one of the reports from one of the section engineers, not in this area, that 85% of the road flooding has actually been caused because of that.
Yeah.
It's not because our drainage systems are not working. It's because of the amount of detritus that sits on the road and leaves in this time of year. So that's why the work that we've engaged with council to get sweepers on the ground. That proactive work that we're doing at the moment and through yesterday and today, hopefully that will work or help mitigate some of the flooding. The priority for us in terms of we talked today about, you know, getting sandbags, and you can probably appreciate we'll be inundated with sandbag requests, and we simply can't deliver everything, and more importantly, we can't deliver everything on time, and almost whenever we would get requests, it's too late. And I think you've mentioned that.
Yeah.
But we are doing our best with what we've got. And Stephen said there's 10,000 sandbags, you know, in preparation. But they need to be used in areas where potentially where there's a real risk to life. We need to really prioritise those areas with greatest need. Just wondering from a coalface perspective, Stephen, if you have. Because you are really on the coalface and working with Silver Command and in your council area, would you like to add anything to the work that's been done and in relation to sandbags in particular?
Well, we ensured that the stock, that we had an adequate stock, and 9,200 is our full allocation of sandbags throughout Southern Division, throughout this council area. And we'll ensure that they're delivered. As you said, they have to be prioritised. So, you know, if there's a risk to life or a risk to property, we would seek to prioritise those locations for the delivery of sandbags. And we do, in situations like this, we do deliver thousands of sandbags. And we were out over the weekend, the Lisbury Road in Strangford. We were placing sandbags across an entrance to a house. So it is done, you know, but again, I would emphasize that people do come in and if it, for areas that don't have a history of flooding and other locations where the road drainage system isn't even a factor, water's coming off land from behind the house. And, you know, they're looking for the staff from the roads authority to do that. And that's not something we would really do because we have our own priorities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could I possibly come in again and just ask for some clarity on where we actually, who we go to ask for sandbags? Is it Floodline or is it the DFI section office?
Well, if you approach the section office, you can go through the Floodline and put it online as well. But, you know, the section office does have a good relationship with elected representatives and it's something we value. So you can make appeals direct to the section office.
In the back of the report, there's telephone numbers and contact details of where to get those, both in ours and out of ours. Mm-hmm. Please use them because they're monitored 24/7, mm-hmm. and you'll be able to, you know, whoever needs that service will be triaged in terms of getting that processed.
Okay, happy enough, Councillor Hearn.
Yes, I think so. I suppose my experience over this past couple of days in particular is that there seemed to be a disjoint in terms of the advice coming from Floodline, you know, that while, you know, on the one hand, you can't get them in advance, then today you couldn't get them in an emergency. And I just think this may be something that needs tweaked there rather than, you know, us or anybody wasting their time trying to get the sandbags if we just go to DFI section office. As opposed to follow the advice going to Floodline, it might be simpler for everybody.
I would go back to use the telephone numbers that are in the back of the report.
Mm-hmm.
There's emergency lines, you know, in ours and out of ours.
Yeah.
That's the direct contact.
We're not in a position to distribute sandbags from the section offices to either elected representatives or members of the public, because this is quite a dangerous place. And, you know, if you start offering sandbags out to the public, they would come into the depot. And please contact us and request sandbags.
Yes, definitely.
I totally understand the point you're making, Councillor O'Hare, though. I understand the frustration that must come when you can't get them in advance, and then on the day when they're needed, maybe there's not a high enough priority associated to that incident, and that's a hard judgment call to make when you're not on site. So we do often have Rivers colleagues who will attend flooding incidents to assess them, and sometimes that means turning up with a whole pumping crew and all the rest of it, and other times, unfortunately, it's just not possible to prioritise a given location, and it sounds like that's what you've maybe experienced today or over the weekend. And, you know, apologies that we aren't in a position to provide the help that we would like to provide every single time, particularly during a significant flooding event like this, where
mm-hmm.
we are activating our emergency response in a much more significant way. We end up having to hold back the resources that we have. We only have so many pumps, we only have so many people, so many sandbags. Mm-hmm. And we have mm-hmm. to hold those because we fully expect to need them for situations where there is a risk to life. And those are the things that, unfortunately, we have to prioritise. But, you know, things like community resilience groups and other mm-hmm. avenues of support can help people prepare. And certainly if people are in homes that have experienced flooding before and are worried about it again, that's a really good route to ensure that people are alive to the latest information and can get the advice on how to protect their home and their property against any flooding that might happen in the future. So if there are any specific cases, I would encourage them to look at getting involved with that avenue of support as well.
Okay. I'm just conscious of time because of still five more councillors after you have
been. Thank you very much. Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to Mark and the team for producing this report. It's very comprehensive. It's a good read. I'm in Newcastle here and the rain is battering against the window and we have a high tide in about 4 hours. So there's a huge expectation on the flood alleviation scheme. We'll see tomorrow in the next few days what happens. Firstly, I'd like to thank you for the number of completed dropped curbs and mobility ramps, which is good to see that that's all still continuing. I'd also like to thank Hugh Morgan, Trevor Maxwell and Davey Watson, our local team here. So as a new councillor, they have been absolutely phenomenal and extremely helpful and have kept me on the right track. My question is, you mentioned your climate targets when you were doing your presentation, and with that in mind, I wanted to know, will there be any plans to alleviate the traffic congestion at the top of the town in Newcastle, where the traffic is forced to a single lane, impacting the Dundrum and Castlewell and Main access roads into the town, which results in hundreds of vehicles idling on the two roads? This isn't seasonal, although it's far, far worse in peak times, but it does happen throughout the year. So I was just wondering, are there any plans to alleviate that? Thank you.
So I'll try and answer at a strategic level, and then maybe Mark or Stephen might like to comment on the specific location. So when we look at how we're going to respond to the requirements of the Climate Change Act to decarbonise transport by 2050, there are a number of high-level policies that we're developing that we think are the answer to that. One of those is switching fuels and encouraging people to travel by electric vehicle or hydrogen or other forms of renewable fuel that have a direct impact on air quality. But more specifically to the concern you're raising, encouraging people to use public transport and active travel wherever possible, even for the last portion of journeys, if it isn't practical, as it often isn't, to use public transport for the whole of a journey. So, you know, to take Newcastle as an example, that might look like some form of park and ride provision around Newcastle to avoid the need for cars to travel along the front. It could also, in certain circumstances, look like us taking a decision to restrict traffic as to where and when it can go, to look at parking provision in order to ensure that where people need to travel by car, that they travel in certain places and not in other places where we know that there are issues. So that's the kind of strategic response that we're developing, but we understand fully that the need to consult with elected representatives and the public and the communities in question is going to be an important part of deciding which interventions to actually deliver over the next 20 or so years.
Thank you.
I'll just pick up. I was jotting some notes down for my answer, and Colin said it. So really what I was going to summarise it as, that there needs to be, there's a lot more work to do to try and bring together those combined things that, for example, active travel, you know, I'm just using words, bus priority, all those other options that people have to be able to travel, to get out of the car, that would ultimately reduce traffic congestion. But we need an effective strategy in place in each town, village, city, and a joined up approach. And over the last, this year, what we've started to do in the department is actually do that. So we've joined up links with TransLink, very close links with TransLink, with our active travel team and our traffic teams, to try and come together with a priority list and a division of what things we can take forward. So it's at its very early stages, but hopefully something like that, joined up right across the division, will have a lot more work to do to try and put those things in place, to try and encourage people to get out of their cars. But to be able to do that, you need to have effective active travel public transport in place to do that, and active travel links. That's a longer term goal. From a short term goal, what we do on our network development team, I call them traffic team, but they're very, they watch, monitor, locations of high congestion, and we would link that to any injury collision information and accident cluster sites to see if we can improve movement of traffic. It's about safety and economic movement. We would do that right across the division. I'm not aware of any plans at the moment to do anything at that location, but I can certainly take a look at it, see if we can do anything. But again, changing anything in that location to do a major scheme or to increase traffic flow would be a major undertaking.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sir Lewis.
Thank you. I'm conscious of time, so I'll be as quick as I can. Just want to say, first of all, thank you to the team for the work that they do, and I am huge. And thank you to all the team there out at the castle, Navan site, that no matter what we ask them, that it does get done, and if it can't be done, that they'll explain to us why. I'm wanting them to come back again onto the online response and reporting system there. I have absolutely no doubt that the work is being done and that these things are being followed up on. I keep a list and keep a spreadsheet of these things, and even though that I know from feedback from the constituent that the work has been done, there is just there's no update coming back on the system. For example, I have reports there from April and May, and it's just sitting static that there is a response outstanding. So it was just to sort of drill down to ask, is there currently consideration given as to how that can be effectively getting back updates as fast as possible? And I'm fully aware that you said that you don't want to take staff off the ground to be sitting all day in front of a screen, and that's absolutely right. But it was to check if there's currently a discussion ongoing as to how to solve that problem. Also, on the good written of the roads, I'm aware that there's only two roads has been added to the Gritton schedule since 2015, and we're all aware and conscious that there are that there are continually houses being built, there's expansion, and there's roads that potentially weren't as busy a number of years ago that have now become a more used route, and it's to check if there's any plans to review that current Gritton schedule and adding more roads to it. Finally, on the Dundrum cycle path, I think my council colleague there, Councillor McMurray, has that raised, and it's just to confirm that we will be able to feed into that consultation process and to check if there has ever been any engagement with the National Trust, as I'm very conscious that no matter what the council do and what the road service do, that ultimately all these cars parking along that lay-by are there to utilise that National Trust beach and walk, and to ask, has there ever been any consideration given to a bloody bridge style putting the non-parking sort of barriers out there to prevent cars parking along that lay-by, as if you were to drive past that during the height of the summer period, it is very busy, and it does present a huge safety problem. I'm not wanting to take away long stretches of a lay-by, but we are building a cycle path that has taken away stretches of lay-by between Clock and Dundrum, and that could be something there that's worth looking at to try to prevent those cars from parking there, because the council who I liaised with on this past 2 years did put that walkway in place, and as Councillor Clark said, that there could potentially be something there that we could do to maybe encourage cars to use the car park and encourage cars to use that crossing there. And I'll just to also ask on the cycle path, that we're all conscious that the path is going in place, to check what the timescale was for the completion of that last part, and to ask if the local section office has a suitable plan to ensure that the maintenance of the path is upkept, because the last thing that you want is to build this cycle path. The cycle path's not getting used by cyclists and it ends up turning into a very expensive walkway, but one that the section office can't keep or can't maintain. But just again, to thank you for the damn work you have done and for the presentation here.
Colin, I think you were going to take the IT.
Yeah, so, I mean, I will just say that totally agree with the point you've made, Councillor Lewis, about the need to maintain infrastructure that we build, and it is something that we struggle with due to a lack of resource and a lack of people, but it's a point well made, and it is something we're conscious of. In terms of our ability to upgrade the defect reporting portal and a few other things, as Mark has highlighted earlier, there's been a lot of thought given to this, a lot of discussion given to this, and you could very well see a solution where if we were able to introduce electronic devices for works orders and for reporting of works orders, that could be linked directly into the system to automatically update the status and issue all the updates to the person who logged it or the person who raised it and all of that. So, you know, as a solution, that's what we're aspiring to, and that's what we would like to move to be able to deliver. What I would say, and one of the reasons why it has been slow, is when you look at the budget position, that the money to do that would come out of the minus 160 million resource pressure that we had at the start of this year. So when we talk about the impact of having a significant overspend planned against a budget that didn't come close to what we thought we needed, it essentially forces me to remove all of the money for anything that's discretionary. And unfortunately, although this would be a very valuable improvement, it falls into that category of discretionary. There's no law saying we have to do it. There is a law saying we have to do lots of other things, and we end up having to prioritise those over our ability to deliver the kind of service levels that we would like, which we regret, but that's the explanation for it, unfortunately.
And I'll just add on a couple of three things then. With regard to updates on the online system, it's the same people who inspect our roads who update the system. So because they're most familiar with the roads, they will triage the defects. But we are in a very dire position in terms of the amount of inspectors we have to inspect our roads. I think the figure that I heard recently was we have like 115 inspectors, and we only have 78 in post. Sorry, 115 posts, and only 78 inspectors actually in post. And that those 115 inspectors who need to inspect all our roads. So obviously, we're having difficulty getting the roads inspected, so we have to prioritise doing the work first. And I appreciate that means that we're not updating the system as quickly as we want to. We want to do a lot more if we had the people in place. Our priority is getting the defects inspected, fixed on the ground for public safety, for the purpose of ensuring public safety. And regrettably, that does mean that we have to put down the priority list, making responses to all of those things in the online system. It's not ideal at all, but we do try and focus our efforts on what we think's right to be done on the road. The grilling question about other roads to be included. So not so long ago, the department has went through a system where it did an optimization study of the whole gridding network, but all the network to establish what the optimization is for gridding. So the criteria that's set out is very clear on what roads are gridded. So it's not just about the level of traffic. It's about whether there's an alternative route, whether it's through route, and it's not just about the traffic. It's about a whole combination of other things. There is a policy on it. It's publicly available. To get another road onto the network, make a request. We'll have a look at it. But we'll be looking at it against the criteria, and if there's an alternative route, then it's unlikely to get on it. and if it doesn't meet a criteria of the number of cars and vehicles, then actually it's not actually optimal, because it doesn't actually, the grit doesn't become soluble. It actually doesn't work. So there's a whole series of factors. But if you wanted to have a look at a route, then ask, use the generic email addresses that are at the back of the report. I'm going to take a look at it for you. But we're pretty sure that the routes that are on the gridding network at the moment are the most effective and efficient, or 80%, because we grid 28% of the network carries 80% of the traffic. So it's the most optimized route network for the value of money that we actually put into it.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Councillor Riley.
Thanks very much, Chairman. Mr. McPeak, thanks very much for your report. I have to say I am a bit disappointed, because after the amalgamation of Newry and Mourne and Down, the service that's provided to the old Mourne legacy area has deteriorated. There's no question or doubt about that. And what Jill said about the northern part of the Mourne's DEA, Newcastle, Kilcoo, Castle Wellen, that's run from Mr. Duffy's office. It's very efficient and proactive and reactive. But in the Mourne's area, we're finding things really difficult, really difficult. And even today we were advised that the engineer who meant to deal with the Mourne's legacy area, we can't contact him because DFI will not provide him with a phone, a mobile phone. And I think that's quite ridiculous, because he must be in post there about a year now. And before that episode, we had no inspector for 18 months who was meant to pick up flaws in the system. So we do feel very, very neglected. And I would like you to investigate that, Mr. McPeak, and maybe try and provide a resolution for us. One of the areas where we've seen a major decline is the way that gullies and storm drains are maintained. And we were told today by the Newry office that, you know, at least once a year. But I can bring you to estates in Kilkeel that are flooded tonight, where I have done online reports and mentioned it to DFI officials 3 years ago, and they're still not cleaned. And Glasdrummond, all those areas on the A2 today that were blocked, is because of neglected maintenance. If those storm drains and gullies were cleaned, those roads would still be open. I would like to know the value of the 370-odd claims that were paid out, because I honestly believe that if the roads in Mourne in particular were better maintained, that you would see a massive reduction in the amount of claims going in. Jill rightly pointed out that vehicles can get clogged up in Newcastle. And I would like to point out that a lot of people think when they get to Newcastle, that's the end of the line. But if you live in Kilkeel or Annalong, you have to wait there for, in the summer months, you could wait for an hour and a half to get through Newcastle. And, you know, you've got a lot of commercial heavy HGV traffic wanting to get through all the factories, the fish plants, the aircraft furnishings, all those big plants in Kilkeel. And it's very, very frustrating for business to have those sort of time delays. And if you look at the Fulfany Road that brings you around what we call the back of the mountains into Kilkeel, it would take very little work to be able to provide that as a sort of a bypass, where when you go into Dundrum, you can turn right through Bransford and up through the mountains into Kilkeel and then along. And it would, you know, relieve a lot of the pressure off Newcastle. Simple things like that if you could look at, Mr. McPeak, we'd be so grateful.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your points. With regard to the mobile phone, I am aware of this. It actually was flagged up today again. I don't know what the issue is either. It doesn't seem to be going through the system for some reason, but I'll chase it up again. It's been in the system for a number of months now, but I'll chase up to make sure that our staff get the equipment they need, particularly this one person. I can't understand it myself. With regard to value of claims, yes, I can get you the information of the amount of money paid out in claims that represents those 370 successful claims. If we had more resource funding, if we were able to remove our limited service to a normal level of maintenance service, that would mean that we would potentially be able to fix our defects in a more proactive way. That inevitably would reduce the amount of claims that the department would get, whether they're successful or unsuccessful. Is it a reflection of the state of the roads? Because I said in my presentation that they are deteriorating, but that's because of the lack of people and lack of money. So I don't disagree. I mean, Colin Woods knows the fact of our need for more people and more money, but it's the question at the moment is prioritising those defects that we can make biggest impact. You know, those defects on higher speed, higher traffic routes. We focus our priorities on fixing those first. And I suspect what's happening in some areas, the more rural areas, our limited service policy is beginning to impact because those rural areas have more rural roads. There may be an impression that we're treating some areas worse than others when actually we have one policy that is used right throughout the division. In the same way, it just may reflect differently in some areas because there's more rural roads in those areas. I'm not sure if there's anything else you want me to pick up on.
Yeah, Chairman, thanks for that, Mr. McPeake. I appreciate you coming back on that. What I would love to invite you down to Kilkeel sometime, or Newcastle, and drive you to Kilkeel and back. You know, the main A2. From Newcastle to Kilkeel, it's actually getting dangerous now. It's so bumpy and irregular in places. And two other issues there, very, very pertinent safety issues. Ballyardle Crossroads, where there's been numerous serious injuries there, still nothing done. And the proposed alternative traffic system for the mountain road Kilkeel, you know, to improve pedestrian safety, you know, it's frustrating for us because we do meet sometimes with local officials and they give us assurances that they're looking at these things, but just nothing seems to happen, Mr. McPeake. And if you can put a bit of pressure on there, we would very much appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Oh, okay, thank you.
All right. I have two more councillors. So, Councillor Bowser. Councillor Rice.
Thank you. Just thanks for your presentation and for all the delivery that has happened so far. Three brief points. It's welcoming to hear that the Ballinhinge bypass plans have been substantially completed, but I was quite surprised to see that the bypass missed out on priority 3 when other schemes were given a higher priority, and they have received direction orders more recently than that one. There are very few towns in Northern Ireland, I would say, that are gridlocked to the extent that Ballinhinge is in the evenings. Second point, don't expect you to have a response on this one now, but just to push for a footpath on the A7 between just around the quarry between Saintfield and Crossgar, about 1.5 miles is needed, and that would create a continuous footpath between Downpatrick all the way to Belfast. And with your remarks on your obligations around active travel, I think that would be a great benefit to the Mid-Down area. And lastly, just in regards, it's been said before, the online reporting portal, I actually think it's very user-friendly. Sometimes it's easier having to explain in an email where something is through that process and being able to upload a photo. But as the main problem, as Councillor McIntyre and Lewis have said, is the responses per constituents want us to be able to respond more than just it's been reported. There's no point in telling them to keep an eye on the tracking system because it isn't updated. And so when the only way, you know, often the only way that they can know if something's going to be done is when workmen are on site. And I know you say that updating the system is slow, but in my experience, there's even issues with work that's maybe actually been completed over a year ago. And I look at the system and it says due to budgetary restraints, blah, 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 and it's actually already been done. So I think the system, I think, could be really good and used well if councillors felt that their reports just weren't going into thin air. But you've already given a response to that one, so you don't need to worry about a response to that one. Thank you.
Thank you. Balinese Bypass, yes. Colin has explained very well their position on Balinese Bypass. Footpath on the A7, I'll pick up on that and double check it myself to see if there's an easy win to establish that potential connection. And thanks for your comments on online reporting.
Thank you.
All right, Councillor Rice.
Thank you, Gareth. No, I'll keep it quick. It's just sort of off the back of what my colleague, Councillor Willie Clark, had said with regard to the gritting and that. Is there, the likes of the Scrog Road in Kilkeel, I think there's only maybe a couple of gritting piles in it, but is there, I know you were saying it takes 8 weeks to refill the current piles. Is there any way we can sort of request for areas that maybe don't have gritting piles at the minute? So I know we're not really heading into the winter area now, but just so we can maybe have one pile stockpiled now, and then
Yes, use the generic email address at the back of the report, put a request into the section office, and they'll do an assessment against criteria as well as it meets the criteria for a grit pile.
Yeah, but it's just on that. I'd done that last year, and every request, there was no correspondence back. There was nothing. It was just silence. So if that's not meeting the criteria, I don't know what will, you know.
Okay, if you don't get a response, use one of the other generic email addresses of the secretariat email address, then I go through an action on it to get back to you on it. Yep. But there is a very strict criteria as to when a grit pile is to be placed on it and it's open.
Yeah, well, and just the second last point was, and I know we're not trying to get too parochial here, but it's from the back of what Councillor Rowdy had just said there. He's 100% right. In the Mourns area, some of the gullies and that. I know in the rural areas, you're under a statutory obligation to clear them maybe once a year, but there's areas that we know for a fact haven't been cleared in over a year, and that's just contributed. Like tonight, a night like this, you can't legislate for weather like this, but when we're getting constant flooding in areas, there are constant problems. Because the gullies haven't been cleared, you know, so I know it's probably a bit parochial thinking it's particularly a problem in the Mourns, but it's in the likes of the rural areas here in Ollycall, Greencastle, Ballymadurphy. It's a very, very bad gull. But
cutting across you, don't mean to do that, sorry.
No, you're dead on.
there shouldn't be a policy on gullies in rural areas and urban areas. The gullies are cleaned once a year. That's the stop. So we need to pick up on the fact that those gullies that you think aren't being done, that they are being done.
Yeah. No, I understand it's maybe a staffing issue as well, but it's just one of those things that it feels like it's been overlooked and it's maybe causing a bigger problem later down the line, you know. But definitely if it's something that the gullies is a massive issue, if you could take that back. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you. I will do that.
Thanks, Mario. All right. Thank you. I had a list of my own, but I think you've had enough questions tonight. I'll just send them through as I do. But one question that I think has appeared quite frequently, or in responses has appeared quite frequently, is about staff. And given the announcement only, I think over a week ago, that 900 posts will be filled in the civil service, given the recruitment freeze has been lifted, is DFI Roads expecting any of those 900 posts to be in Newry Moran Down District to help alleviate the pressures that you're feeling and actually might address some of the issues that some of my colleagues have raised tonight?
we would love it if the answer was yes, but unfortunately at the minute the answer is no, and the reason for that goes back to the budget problems that we've talked about a number of times. So one of the other things that we're having to do to manage with the fact that we need 160 million more than we got is not fill posts and not fill vacancies, including when someone resigns or retires, not automatically replacing them. And look, we get that that's not a great way to look after a road network. It certainly doesn't help those of us who are still in the department, doesn't help Stephen and Mark manage the workloads that they've been given, and doesn't help us even deliver the limited service policy that we've set out. But we literally don't have the money to hire any of those people. Now, there are areas where we're having to look for funding some vacancies. So to give you a wee bit of context on what that means, within my group in the department, there are about 460 vacant posts, but only about 40 of those are funded in order to replace. And a large number of the ones that are funded are for capital schemes like the A5, where there is a degree of certainty around funding for the work. A lot of the work on maintenance that's delivered across the section offices is funded by resource budget, as are the people, and we simply don't have enough of that. And a number of times I've heard comments about it would be cheaper to do it earlier, cheaper to intervene sooner, whether it's a pothole or a gully that needs emptied more often. And we don't disagree. That's absolutely true. But if we delivered all of the interventions that we thought we would burn through that budget by about August, and we would have nothing left to get us through the winter. And unfortunately, that extends to fill in vacant posts. Now, we're not resting on that. We're not saying, oh, there you go, we can't do anything. We'll just stop there. We're continuing to look for different ways in which we might be able to justify filling vacant posts. Mark's talked about carriageway inspectors as one good example where we know straight away that we're really putting our compliance with our legal obligations in jeopardy by not having enough people to do certain aspects of the work. But unfortunately, that recent announcement is going to have a very limited impact on us as an organisation.
Okay. Thanks, Colin. I suppose I asked it in the hope, I know the head of civil service husband is from Newry Moore and Down District Council, and she might have, you know, seen favourably on our area, but sadly not.
If she does, I'll be sure to welcome that with open arms. You can be assured on that.
All right, thanks, Colin. All right, thank you, Mark, Colin, Stephen. A lot of questions and a lot of time, and it's very much appreciated. Obviously, the contact details for reps and your colleagues are on the report, so I'd encourage councillors to make use of that. Obviously, if you haven't had a chance to ask any questions tonight, you can always email your questions in to get a response. I don't know if Mark, Colin, Steve want to drop. I know Andrew Castles wants to just provide an update from a council's perspective of what we are doing on the adverse weather conditions. So Mark, Colin, Stephen, if you want to drop, it's entirely up to you, given it's 7:45 at night. And go and get dinner. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Andrew, I hand over to you then.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep.
The Council's Emergency Management Team met this afternoon at 3:30 to consider... Hold on, I'm going to come across the sales.
Is that okay? I was just saying, the current Council's Emergency Management Team met at 3:30 this afternoon to consider earlier meetings that had taken place, earlier multi-agency meetings that had taken place during the day, including the police decision to set up a Gold Command at Brookland and a Silver Command in the northwest in Belfast, with council attendance at that. Obviously there's an amber weather warning in place from 9 o'clock this evening until 9 o'clock in the morning, and the decision was taken to close council buildings to the public from 6 o'clock this evening until 10 o'clock in the morning, and to keep the situation continuously under review. That means that leisure centres, for example, won't open until 10 o'clock, and that refuse collection, street cleansing, for example, grounds maintenance, etc., will not commence before 9 o'clock in the morning. Clearly, advising staff to take notice of the advice that's given by the PSNI and DFI. One of the major areas of concern is in the Newry area, particularly with regard to the levels in the canal and the river, and we have been in close liaison with the Rivers Agency during the day and are continuing to support them and to monitor the levels in the canal, because I think, as somebody said earlier on, there's a high tide this evening at early hours of the morning at about 12:37. During the day, at the times of lower tide, we have had the sluice gates open in the canal to allow the water to flow out, but essentially there's as much water coming in as is going out. And at 3 o'clock, the level was up at 17.8, with a maximum on the canal of 21 foot. So we're, Rivers Agency, I know, are being very proactive in the Newry area and have concerns. Clearly, once the high tide peak has passed and the water levels start to drop, I think we'll all feel a lot more comfortable. Whilst the amber warning is in place from 9 o'clock tonight until 9 o'clock tomorrow, there are ongoing yellow warnings during the week. I think that's only going to, clearly that's only going to add more rainfall to the already saturated ground. And we will be meeting again as an emergency management team to consider how things have gone through the night and what the prospects are for the day ahead. And we'll advise members and staff accordingly. That's really where we've got to for now. It's clearly an evolving situation, and as you all know, these things are as predictable as they can be, but can last for longer or shorter, as the case may be, and may come early or come late. So it is a bit of a dynamic situation, but clearly the safety of the public and staff is our primary concern at this stage. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. Josephine, just there.
Oh, yes, thanks, Chair. Just to say that the PSNI have now issued a warning. It's on the website about warning the public not to travel between 9 p.m. tonight and 9 a.m. tomorrow morning because of the heavy rain. We had heard this notice was likely to come, but it's now out on the Department of Infrastructure's website. So that's just to give you a little bit of background of the decisions that we've taken and why we've taken them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, folks, that is the end of the meeting. Again, thank you very much to the Department of Infrastructure representatives for attending tonight. Thank you to Andrew and Josephine for the update. I would ask that, given the ongoing warnings, that if there's any change tomorrow, if that an email could even be circulated to councillors just to keep them informed as well, that'd be much appreciated. Everyone stay safe, and hopefully we'll get through this bad weather very quickly. Have a good night. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.